Everything you want to know about a bishop's life, but we're not talking about the sacraments or liturgy. This is Dive Deep. From the Diocese of Springfield in Illinois, this is Dive Deep, where we dive deep into our Catholic faith. I am Andrew Hansen, pleased to be joined by Bishop Papraki. Bishop, good to see you. How are you?
I'm doing great, Andrew. How are you?
I'm excellent. I'm really interested in this conversation because we as Catholics, I think we can always get a, we understand what you do as a bishop from the liturgical side. We see you at masses, we see you at prayer services and sacraments, everything that goes on. But what about you behind the scenes? What about like your personal life? Where do you, you know, run errands? What, you know, all this sort of stuff about your life that we maybe don't know. So we're just going to run through a whole bunch of questions today for Bishop Papraki so you can get to know him more on that personal level. So we'll start with this, Bishop Papraki. How do you get paid?
Well, I get paid by direct deposit paycheck. So I do get a salary. I'm not the highest paid person. I'm not anywhere near really being the highest paid person here at the diocese, nor am I the lowest paid. And I make a little bit more than our priests do. But I would point out maybe what some people don't know is there's a difference between priests who take a vow of poverty and diocesan priests. So priests that belong to a religious order, like the Franciscans or the Norbertines or the Palatines that we have in our diocese here, they take a vow of poverty, which means their paycheck gets turned over to their religious community. So they take poverty in that sense, literally. They don't take any salary personally. The money goes over to the order, but then the order provides for their needs. So they provide a car, they provide food, room and board, and health insurance and things like that, and you know, access to whatever they need materially. But they live very simply. Priests, on the other hand, diocesan priests do not take a vow of poverty, which maybe some people don't realize. However, we are expected to live simply. And so that's why, even though I'm, as the bishop, I'm technically, I guess, the CEO of the religious corporation, I don't make the most money.
And actually not even close. I don't know your salary, but I at least have it. And I know you don't have to tell us exactly, yeah, but I know it's not even close.
Right. And it, So we diocesan priests, and I'm a diocesan priest too, before I became bishop, we get a salary, which means that we pay taxes. I just got my tax return from my tax preparer for me, so I got to file that before April 15th. On the other hand, religious priests do not, because of a vow of poverty. That's something in federal law. They don't even have to file a tax return. So we diocesan priests file a tax return. We pay our taxes. For the most part, we pay for most of our personal expenses, like our car. The diocese gives some travel allowance for our priests, but in my case, that's one of the perks I get as being bishop of the diocese. The diocese provides a car for me, and otherwise, though, the parish also normally provides room and board for priests. So, and to that extent, we don't necessarily have to be paying for our meals personally, but other things like our clothing and. I go to something for fun, like a sporting event, baseball game or hockey game. I pay for that out of my own pocket.
Okay, now let's get into your work life. How many hours a week do you work?
Well, that's a very good question. I don't punch a clock, so I don't really know. I suppose I put in somewhere like 60 hours a week, something like that, because I'm here at the Pastoral Center during the week. I have meetings and. I'm at my desk handling mail and email, but then in the evenings, oftentimes I'm out. We have confirmations on Tuesday evenings, typically with First Communion. Saturday mornings, I'm in parishes on many of the weekends or at the cathedral. So, it's the kind of thing, though. There's not even a clear distinction sometimes between what's work and what's recreation. I mean, being a priest and being a bishop is relationship with people, you know. So when I go to a reception, the other night, for example, you had a reception for the Good Shepherd Society that I was at, and I don't know, it didn't feel like work to be there. I guess the part that was work was saying a few words, but for the most part, I was just being at a social event with people, and that's very, very much fun.
Awesome. What time do you get up in the morning, and what time do you go to bed typically?
Well, my alarm goes off at 4:40 in the morning. We have practice in our diocese. Some of you may have seen the poster at 4:40. We pray for 40 seminarians. That's our goal. We want to have 40 seminarians in our diocese. So many of the staff here set their alarm clocks or their watches at 4:40 in the afternoon. So sometimes I'm in a meeting and I hear all these alarms going off and every people are praying at 4:40. Since I'm usually busy in the afternoon, I set mine at 4:40 in the morning. And so it wakes me up. I say my Hail Mary for 40 seminarians in the morning. In all honesty, sometimes I hit the snooze button, though, and I go back to sleep for a little while. But typically, I'm up somewhere between 5:30 and 6. My day starts out normally with going for a run. I like to run at least a couple miles every morning. Kind of wakes me up, gets me going. Then I come back and I have my prayers. I have a chapel in my residence at the Cathedral Rectory. So I say my Office of Readings, morning prayer. If I don't have a public mass that day, I say private mass in my own chapel and spend a little time in prayer, have breakfast, and then head over to the office. And then it's a day with, as I said, maybe meetings and appointments with people. And then in the evening, it varies too. So sometimes I have the confirmation in the evening, First Communion, and other times maybe have a dinner scheduled with somebody. And other evenings, I stay home. But there's always email to catch up on things like that.
And that's my next question. How many emails do you get a day typically that you think are actually like relevant and need your attention?
Oh, I get, I don't know, maybe 20 or so a day.
As many as I thought.
Yeah, okay. Not as many. I mean, I don't know, maybe I get more than that. I don't count them. But I mean, those are the ones that I really have to answer today. Whereas, I mean, I get a lot of emails that's like, well, I don't have time right now to answer it. So I flag them, and I got a whole bunch of flagged messages that I'm still working on trying to get back to.
Now, you talked about your car really quick. How many miles do you think you drive a year in our diocese? We're a big diocese, so I know you don't know for sure, but like, do you have an estimate on how many miles you think you do every year?
Yes, I do know that because I do have to calculate that for my taxes.
Oh, okay.
So, before COVID, I was putting on about 40,000 miles a year.
Wow.
And since COVID, this last year, it was about 30,000 miles that I put on. We have a rather large diocese geographically. We cover actually 15,000 square miles. So we're 28 counties from the Mississippi River to the Indiana border. So just driving around the diocese puts on a lot of miles. And then my family is up in Chicago, so I get up to Chicago every once in a while. And other trips. I used to teach at Notre Dame, a university in South Bend, Indiana. So that added to the miles too. But so various things like that will add up.
Now I want to talk about food. Do you go to the grocery store and do you cook for yourself? How do you go about cooking?
Well, I do go to the grocery store not very often. I usually stock up on things that I can just put in the cabinets or something like that. Like canned soup or canned tuna fish or things like that. Those are kind of like for emergencies when I don't have somebody cooking or I'm not going out and it's like there's no food around the house. We had a cook at the Cathedral Rectory. Bill Vogt was our office manager and a part-time cook. He was a bachelor, so he had time to cook for us at least a couple of days a week. He passed away last year, God rest him. But so we don't have a cook anymore at the cathedral. By the way, I live there with four other priests. So oftentimes I'm having dinner with the other priests. And so we have, since the death of Bill Vogt last year, we started what they call, I guess, a meal train at the cathedral. And we have parishioners who will make a meal for us, usually twice a week, like Monday and Wednesday. And they'll bring over food and we'll have that for supper. And then there's usually enough leftovers. And then another evening, especially during on a weekend, if I'm going to do a parish visit, for example, well, then I'm at the parish and they're usually providing meals, oftentimes with parishioners or at least the parish councils. So other than that, we have a housekeeper at the cathedral and the office manager at the cathedral gets some groceries for me on a regular basis too, like my breakfast food and things like that. I usually have breakfast. I just have cereal and yogurt in the morning and a banana. And on Sunday, I make myself eggs. That's a special treat on Sundays.
What's your cereal?
My cereal? Oh, I like Raisin Bran, Life, granola, things like that.
Life. Going back to your childhood days there, Bishop?
Yeah, with cinnamon.
Oh, with cinnamon. Okay, do you have a go-to restaurant or food place that you just love?
I'd say my favorite restaurant in Springfield would be Lukanen's on 4th. It's right across from the governor's mansion. Fine food. It's a nice atmosphere, good setting. Keith Lukanen is the owner. He's a wonderful chef. And so I really enjoy going there, and it's a walking distance from the cathedral. So when the weather's nice, I can head over there. Maybe something a little more casual, again, within walking distance, a place maybe like Obed and Isaac's is always fun to go to. There's a lot of good restaurants in Springfield, Saputo's, Bella Milano. Those are maybe some of my more frequent go-to places.
I remember you told me your favorite fast food place was White Castle. is that still your, I mean, there's hardly any White Castles anymore. When you see one, are you like, gotta go?
Yes. I mean, White Castle is always intriguing to me. We don't have any White Castles in Springfield. And so like, if I'm down in St. Louis and I see White Castle, like the temptation is there. I'm not big on fast food. I try to eat healthy, but I do once in a while. I've done this for the priest at the cathedral. In St. Louis, I'll pick up a sack of White Castle sliders and bring them back, and we'll have that. That's probably my favorite fast food.
Awesome. Okay. Do you do your own laundry?
No, I don't. So we do have a housekeeper at the cathedral who cleans for us, and she does my laundry for me. So I appreciate that.
How often do you hear confessions? Do you still hear confessions?
I don't hear confessions very often, and we do have the priest at the cathedral that it's part of the schedule at the cathedral to have confessions every day, actually. And I've asked Father Alford sometimes, the rector at the cathedral, especially like around Easter or Christmas, and if he needs help with that. And he usually has enough priests to cover that. I have done that in the past a few times. Occasionally, I'd get people spontaneously that ask me to go to confession. I just had someone come to my office last week and said the person wanted to go to confession. So that happens from time to time. One of the cautions I have about hearing confessions is that being the bishop of a diocese, I have to deal with a lot of the problems that emerge. And so so I don't want to be put in a position where someone has confessed something to me and then I can't act on it because of the seal of confession. The confessor has to keep things in that seal of confession, keep it confidential. So typically as a practice, I do not hear confessions of priests or seminarians, which is, in some ways I wish as a pastor that I could be the confessor for them. But on the other hand, I can't be in a position where they've confessed something to me that really requires disciplinary action. And because I'm in a position then of a seal of confession that I can't do anything about it.
Okay. Now, one thing I know, seeing you at Mass so many times, you have a lot of vestments.
Yes.
Obviously, all the liturgical colors throughout the years, it varies, and holy days, feast days. How many vestments do you own, and how do you go about cleaning them?
Well, that too, I don't have a good count. Fortunately, we have lots of cabinets and closets at the cathedral rectory. And so I have quite a few vestments. I have a number of them were given to me when I became a bishop in 2003. I was pastor of a big parish near O'Hare Airport, and the people pitched in and they got vestments for me for all the different colors. So I have white, and I have violet, and I have red, and I have green. They got me matching mitres. There's a religious goods store in Chicago, House of Hanson, that specializes in clerical garb for priests and deacons, but also for bishops. There aren't too many places around the country that do that. So I have those. On the cassocks, like this is called a cassock. This is a black one. It's called a house cassock. I have one that's like, it's magenta, or you might say kind of a purple color, and that I typically wear underneath my vestments. And I get them cleaned at the laundry. Woman who does my laundry, if I need a suit or something to be cleaned, or my vestments, I give them to her, and she takes them to the cleaners and has them cleaned for me.
So just our regular cleaners, and yeah. they know what they're doing.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's sometimes they'll look at it, and they'll, because it's maybe something that they don't normally do. There are some things, for example, that I've tried to get cleaned that they just don't know how to do, like the bishop's hat, the mitre, for example. And because it's made of different materials, that's, I guess they don't want to destroy it or something. So I've had them at times decline and say, "Oh, we really can't clean that." Which, if it's soiled, well, then at some point, then I just say I can't use it anymore because if it can't be cleaned.
Okay. Okay.
And then I get a new one.
Would you say you have like dozens of vestments? If you had to give a round number?
Yes.
Dozens. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. Okay. What are some fun things you do on your day off, which is Friday? What are some things you like to do?
Well, often I'll go up to Chicago. I have a couple of classmates that I go to visit. I have a lake house up, it's called Duck Lake, which is near Fox Lake, and we'll go up there and just relax on a day off. I do this also when I go on vacation. I typically, for many years now, for the last at least 25 years, I've been going to Florida for a vacation in the winter. And it's very low-key. I like to read. And so I love to read, but I don't often have much time to do that. So I'll read when I go on vacation or on my day off, maybe try to read things that are a little more enjoyable, like some fiction, works of fiction, especially science fiction I like. Then I'll try to get exercise on my day off. Might be a day when I can do a little bit more running and even get in some hockey.
Excellent. You mentioned vacations. How many vacation days do you get?
Well, typically, I mean, officially, I get a month. Like every priest, we get a month off. I don't know that I always take that. My winter vacation is usually about a week to 10 days in Florida. And then during the summer, I have time away that I don't necessarily count as vacation. Like I go to the Napa Institute in Napa, California. Typically, the last few years, it's the end of the summer. And I go there. I don't necessarily count that as vacation because I'm going to a conference. On the other hand, it's California. It's wine tasting, maybe a cigar or something like that, and just meeting friends and seeing people. And so that can be very relaxing.
Awesome. Okay. When you are out and about, how often are people coming up to you? Or do you get those looks? You're like, you know, I feel like I know that guy. And do people come up and ask for pictures or ask for blessings when you're walking in the grocery store, or what happens?
Well, yes, when I go to the grocery store, I might be wearing my clerical collar or just a clergy shirt or something like that. So people will acknowledge me and they'll say hello. Or maybe they don't know that I'm the bishop, but they just see a clergyman. So they'll be respectful and say hello. When I'm out running, well, I'm usually running early in the morning, so I don't run into too many people at that time. I do go work out at the Fit Club South, and occasionally somebody will recognize me, but I think a lot of times not, because I'm not wearing my clerical garb. I'm wearing my gym clothes, and I'm usually wearing my White Sox baseball cap. So it's one of those things where out of context, they might look at me and think, he looks familiar, but, you know, people are kind of in their own space too, and when we're working out, so they don't necessarily say anything. Oftentimes, in a restaurant, we'll be recognized. Well, again, we're usually wearing our collars when I'm out. If I go to a restaurant with the other priests, and sometimes people will be very generous and they'll pick up our check, which is a nice perk as well.
I love it. Okay, your schedule. I have access to your schedule as your communications director, and I'm like, frankly, when you said you work 60 hours a week earlier in this conversation, I'm like, I don't buy it. I think it's a lot more than 60 hours. Who sets up your schedule? How do you manage it? What's your process for how that works?
Well, my executive secretary is Mrs. Laura Felstuhl, and so she handles my calendar, but we actually do a calendar meeting. And so I do that meeting with my vicar general, my chief of staff, you're included too because of the public relations and communications component of that. But I get a lot of requests, including requests from outside the diocese. So that's why I like to go over that with my calendar team, as I kind of call them, because sometimes it's a question of discerning, is this something, especially if it's outside the diocese, is this something that I should do? Is this a good use of my time? I don't want to spend too much time out of the diocese. On the other hand, as a bishop, there is a role for a bishop in the universal church. And so I can't just say, no, I've got to work. I'm only concerned about what happens here in central Illinois. As a bishop, I have a role to play in the universal church as well. So that's how we go over and decide which things to take.
Okay. How often does Rome correspond with you? Is there a certain way they reach out to you? You know, we think of internal communications. Is there an internal mechanism where you as bishops receive word from Rome that us people, lay people, or even, you know, newspapers, news outlets, that you get information before we do?
Theoretically, yes. Sometimes it depends on the dicastery, as they call it. There's different departments. like the Congregation for Clergy, as it used to be called, now the Dicastery for Clergy or the Dicastery for Bishops. So it depends on the subject matter. Some I have found are pretty sophisticated, and they seem to have email lists of all the bishops. So if they'll give us a heads up that this document is about to come out, it's embargoed, they'll let us know about that. And so I appreciate when that happens. Other times, though, that doesn't happen. Sometimes I hear about it if something's in the news, or I hear about it through the media, or maybe you tell me or something like that. So it's that's a little frustrating when that happens. In terms of kind of more typical correspondence, there is a protocol for doing that. So every country has what's called an apostolic nuncio, which is basically like the Pope's ambassador. So here it's Cardinal Christophe Pierre. He's the apostolic nuncio, and the apostolic nunciature, as it's called, is like the Vatican embassy. In fact, it's on Embassy Row in Washington, D.C. And so when I'm communicating with any of those dicasteries in Rome, typically the protocol is for me to send that through Washington, D.C., through the apostolic nunciature. And then they forward it. They have what's called a diplomatic pouch. So they have a courier that actually takes it to Rome, like, I don't know, every week or every couple of weeks or something like that. So it may not be the fastest way, but it is the most secure way to get it there. And then typically a response will come by that same route. It'll be sent to the nunciature in Washington, D.C., and then forwarded to me.
Interesting. That'd be a fun job. You're just flying to Rome back and forth, handing things off. Okay. How often are you communicating with other bishops about news going on or maybe efforts you want to team up on?
Well, I'd say quite a bit because I am part of, as every bishop is, of the Conference of Bishops, the United States Conference of Catholic Bishops. I'm a chairman of the Committee on Canonical Affairs and Church Governance. And I'm also on a couple of other committees. I'm on the Committee for Budget and Finance and the Committee for Laity, Marriage, Family Life, and Youth. So there will be times when we have those meetings. Sometimes they're in person in Washington, D.C., where the USCCB headquarters are, or in Baltimore, where we have our November meeting, or in June we meet in different parts of the country. So that could be, if they're in person, they're in any one of those places. But oftentimes a committee meeting these days, we'll do a lot of those by video conference. And so in between that, there'd be a lot of correspondence by email, sometimes by phone call. You know, so we'll be talking over different agenda items that we're working on.
Do you ever, like, when, you know, if Rome does come out with something or there's an issue going on in the country that maybe that popped up that you as bishops maybe didn't talk about in your last USCCB meeting, are you maybe picking up a phone and calling some of your brother bishops, like, hey, what's your read on this? Or what are you doing as a diocese to respond?
Sure, yes. I think that's one of the purposes of the Conference for Bishops. You know, a lot of people think the United States Conference of Bishops is like the federal government, you know, but it's really more like an association. You know, so the president of the conference is the president of the association, so it's not like he's my boss. He's the chairman of the conference, you might say, a chairman of an association. So that whole purpose of it is to facilitate communication and to be sharing ideas and pastoral projects. So when there is something that comes out from Rome, oftentimes we will look at that. All right, how does that apply to us here in the United States? And so we don't have discrepancies, you know, something's being done this way in one diocese and it's being handled differently in another diocese. We try to touch base with each other and make sure that we have some kind of uniform approach to how we're dealing with issues.
What do you call other bishops? Do you call them bishop, their name, or do you just call them by their first name?
Typically by their first name, unless it's in a formal setting. You know, people ask me sometimes how I want to be called. Lay people will ask, and I say, well, the formal title is Your Excellency. The Cardinal's Your Eminence. When I was in Chicago, I would often be called Your Eminence because they knew that was the way to address the Cardinal, but they think that's the way you address every bishop. And occasionally, I still get some people that call me Your Eminence, but that's typically for Cardinals. The Pope is Your Holiness, and a bishop is Your Excellency. So if I'm like at a formal dinner and I'm introducing a bishop, I'll say, I'd like to introduce His Excellency, the Most Reverend John Doe, or whatever. But on a daily basis, when people address me, I say, just call me Bishop, you know, and I'm the only bishop in the diocese, so you don't necessarily even have to use my last name. So it's Bishop Paprocki. I tell people that's not that hard either. It's Rocky with Pap in front of it, Paprocki. And that too. So it's if I'm talking to another bishop, like at a USCCB meeting, we're just having a conversation, we'll just call each other by our first name. When we send emails to each other, it's interesting. So the tradition is for bishop's name to be signed. His signature is put a cross in front of his name. So I'll make a cross, and then Thomas John Paprocki. I don't sign it usually Bishop Thomas John. The cross is kind of an indicator of being a bishop. And so sometimes when I'm communicating with other bishops by email, that's how we'll address each other. So I'll get an email that say, "Dear Cross Tom," and I'll sign it that way, or I'll reply, "Dear Cross John," or whatever it is. You know?
Interesting. Yeah. Okay. Here in the diocesan level, I know you're trying, you're as a pastor of our, you're the pastor of souls, but as CEO, as you mentioned earlier, there's finances and there's HR issues and there's all sorts of stuff. Talk about the councils you have set up. So, you know, people might think, oh, this is just the bishop making this decision. It's a bishop throwing his hammer down. That's not the case. You have several bishops of lay people who are helping you make these decisions and giving you advice on how to make the best decisions.
Yes, we have a number of consultative bodies, as they're called. Some of them are required by canon law, such as a diocesan finance council. Like every parish has a finance council. We have a diocesan finance council made up of people who obviously have financial expertise in accounting or marketing or something like that. And then I have a diocesan pastoral council. The pastoral council is made up mostly of lay people. We have three representatives from each of our deaneries. So I find that very helpful. For example, like when we were considering having our diocesan synod back in 2017, I did a lot of consultation with the diocesan pastoral council about that. Similarly, with the decision to go to confirmation and first communion as the restored order in third grade, conversation with the pastoral council about that, and the decision to do confirmation, first communion at the cathedral. I found the input from the diocesan pastoral council helpful, especially helpful. I also have a presbyteral council, so that is the council of representatives of all the priests. And then some more informal groups, like we have a priest personnel board. So even priest assignments, as the bishop, I assign priests. It is my prerogative to make a direct appointment, but usually I make those appointments in consultation with the presbyteral, with the personnel board, because the priests often know their brother priests better than I do. I mean, I think I know our priests pretty well here in our diocese, but sometimes I'll have an idea that, say, this priest would be good in this parish, and they'll say, well, maybe he'd actually be better over here, for whatever reason. So I find that very helpful too.
Hmm. Compared to other dioceses, how are we doing, financially, vitality, seminarians, mass attendance? I kind of look at this holistic approach here. How would you say we are doing?
Well, I'd say we're doing pretty well. I mean, my point of reference is where I came from, the Archdiocese of Chicago. So I was a priest of the Archdiocese of Chicago for 25 years and then auxiliary bishop there for 7 years before coming here. But it's also, even within the Archdiocese of Chicago, it's shifted. So when I was ordained in 1978, there were 29 in my class, and that number has dropped considerably in recent years. On the other hand, I'd say in comparison, we here in Springfield, in terms of vocations of priesthood, are doing pretty well. So I've ordained 38 priests since 2010, and I'm scheduled to ordain two more at the end of May. And so that brings me up to 40 priests in 15 years, which is, I think, pretty good for the size of our diocese. Considering putting that in perspective, we have 100 diocesan priests, about 25 of them in our senior status, but say senior status because many of them are still very active as senior priests. So 40 out of 100, that means I've ordained now 40% of the priests in our diocese and over half of the priests that are actively assigned in parishes. So in that regard, I think we're doing pretty well. In terms of numbers of people, I think percentage of people that go to church in our diocese is higher than some of the big urban areas. I've heard in some of the areas, like Chicago is under 25%, even less. I think we're above 30%. So in that regard, I think we're doing better. Not as good as we should be. It should be 100% of people going to Mass on Sunday. And we're making some inroads with that. In our parishes with the family school agreement, I understand that church attendance is now up, and I'm happy to see that. One area where I think we are lagging is in the percentage of people in our diocese that are Catholic. So here too, in Chicago was 42%, we said, of the people in the Chicago area were Catholic, which is a pretty high percentage. Here we only number about 12 to 14%. We're much more, as the further south you go, the closer you get to the Bible Belt and more Protestants. And so we are a distinct minority here in our diocese, but I keep saying it doesn't have to stay that way. I mean, that's the whole point of evangelization and trying to bring disciples, hopefully bringing more people into the Catholic Church. And so I think that's an area that is still a challenge for us.
We'll get you out on this one, Bishop Opraki. What's something about a bishop's life you think people either don't know, underappreciate, or what you want people to know about a bishop's life?
Well, here's a little piece of trivia. So, you know, I've written and I've talked in the past about the various articles of that a bishop uses, like the mitre, the hat, and the crozier, and things like that. One thing that a bishop typically does at the end of Mass, when Mass is over and you have the recessional, as I'm processing out, I'm carrying my pastoral staff, my crozier, and I'm walking by and I'm blessing people. Like, I make the sign of the cross like this. I go to this side, make the sign of the cross. I go to this side and make the sign of the cross. And what people don't seem to know is that I'm blessing them. And so those who know it, when I go like this and make the sign of the cross, they cross themselves. But a lot of people think I'm waving. So I get this not only from, of course, from children, but even from adults. I'll make the sign of the cross and they're waving at me. It's like, well, hi, but I'm not waving at you. I'm blessing you. So that's a little piece of trivia that I think would be helpful to know.
All right. So if you go to Mass with Bishop Opraki and he's processing out, make the sign of the cross. Well, we love having you as bishop here. Thank you for kind of, this is really interesting. Just learn about your life behind the scenes. Because again, I think we all know about your life, the public life of seeing you at Mass, seeing you at the cathedral, seeing you out at our parishes. So this really helps know that you are a human being, Bishop Opraki, which I think is another thing some people forget about our priests and bishops. You guys are human.
I hope so.
Awesome. This has been Dive Deep. For more podcasts, head to our YouTube page, youtube.com/DioSpringfield. Until next time, we'll see you right here on Dive Deep.